Well, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
How's everyone today? It's good to see all of you. Thanks for being here. You know, here at Cibolo Creek, we have always believed that there's more than one way to do a Sunday morning message. Now, typically, we invite one of our pastors to consider a topic related to our lives, and we ask ourselves, what do the scriptures have to say in relationship to that topic, and what could we learn more about our faith? So that's typically what we do, but we have also found that one of our favorite ways to really explore our faith is to listen to somebody's story. Like, what's happening in somebody's life as they seek to explore their journey of a relationship with God? And today I'm really excited about the opportunity to share a story with you. So several months ago, following a service, a gentleman came up and introduced himself to me after the service, told me his family had just moved here. This was their first Sunday to come and visit Cibolo Creek, and that they were looking for a church to be a part of. And I noticed three things right off the bat. One, I noticed that he was really tall. And next to me, that's not really that big of a challenge, but I noticed that. Secondly, I noticed that he was a wonderful conversationalist. He just was really comfortable talking, and very kind of authentic in the way that he went about the conversation, and just really enjoyed. We kind of connected just through kind of a mutual respect for each other. And then the third thing that I came to understand, it took me a little while, was that he's incredibly humble. Because in our conversation of about 20 minutes, he mentioned that he played a little baseball. And I thought to myself, well, I played a little baseball too in my day. Little League, right? And and he didn't mention anything else in the entire conversation about it. And so later that afternoon, I got on the internet and I Googled this gentleman's name. And I was like, played a little baseball, like 14 years in the major leagues, three World Series rings. And his name is up there among some of the greats that have played the game. And so I was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. He's just a really, really nice guy. And I'm really excited to be able to spend the morning with our guest today. So how about a warm Cibolo Creek welcome for Jeremy Etchell.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
You felt like the first service went well?
Yeah, it was great. I went long. I saw you started fidgeting, so that's why I ended it.
Yeah, I thought I was going to have to pull you.
Yeah, saw that.
Hey, one thing I didn't mention in the first service when we were talking is I grew up in Pennsylvania, about 2 hours from Philadelphia, so my favorite team growing up were the Phillies. I understand you have a real fondness for the Phillies.
Yeah, I absolutely hate them, but and their fans are verbally abusive, and they really hurt your feelings, like legitimately hurt your feelings. The brotherly love thing, that is absolutely not what that city is.
Well,
about.
Our love language is just a little different.
Yeah, your love language is harsh.
Hey, our staff is a very creative bunch, and they have lots of great ideas. A lot of times, things they want me to do. And so they thought a really great idea maybe to promote this opportunity of you and I sitting down together is that you and I should go to a ballpark somewhere. And I should take a bat and stand in the batter's box, and you throw a couple of pitches at me and see if I can hit you.
Yeah, honestly, I'm going to see if I can hit you. But
that's what I told him. I said, I'm not worried about me hitting him. Yeah. I know I can't, but I'm worried about him hitting me.
Yeah. I tended to allegedly do that from time to time on accident. Just got away from me.
Yeah. Just to kind of say something to somebody.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really, really glad that you chose to do this with us today. Thanks for your
time. Looking forward to it.
I'm going to ask you a couple questions just to help you get acquainted, or help the audience to get acquainted with you. And then we're going to turn the service over to Jeremy here in a few minutes and let him share from his heart. But let's start with just tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, where you grew up, those kinds of things.
Yeah, grew up as a military boy. My dad was in the Air Force. He's a bombardier radar navigator for B-52s. So we kind of traveled all over the world, and wherever he got stationed, we went. And my dad, when he retired from the military, he retired so that we could go to school, high school. He wanted my sister and I to be able to stay in one spot for high school. So he retired after 20 years and moved us back to where we previously stationed at one time in Spokane, Washington. I met my bride there. She's my high school sweetheart. We've been married 19 years in November. I have three little boys, 10, 7, and 5. They're right up in here. My oldest 10-year-old better be taking notes. And I like to hunt. I like to fish. I'm an outdoorsman. One of the favorite things about Texas is 365, 24/7, especially in Axis. I'm flinging arrows like crazy right now. So we're having a good time out there, and I'm enjoying skinning out some animals. So it's been great.
So are you shooting them in your backyard?
Allegedly, possibly. I mean, one had to, because he came into my barn, and you know, my kids were at risk, and so I had to eliminate the risk, you know?
Just being the dad that
you are. Yeah, I'm trying to be a protective dad.
So you just recently moved here from the West Coast. What you brought you to the Bernie area?
My wife doesn't like me to blame her, but I blame her. She shows horses in the AQHA world. And so one of the, I was sitting in a tree stand up in Washington, in the Pacific Northwest, doing some bear hunting. And it was really boring, and the bear weren't coming in. And I just felt like God told me not to be rooted here in Spokane, where I just retired and kind of started to set up shop. And I was weird, because I was like, well, I kind of am rooted here. So it's kind of weird you're saying that. My wife came back from a horse show a couple days later. And she had a new horse trainer, and she really enjoyed the barn and the people she was working with and the trainer. And she goes, I want to move to be closer to my horses. And I was thinking, where? Because I was hoping that to God that she wasn't going to say California. And so she just said, no, I don't want to go there. I want to go to Texas. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. Where? And she was like, Bernie, where's that? Outside of San Antonio in the hill country. Sold. I hunt there all the time. I love the hill country. And we came down about a month later and looked around. I bought this little 12-acre ranch right here in Fair Oaks. And here we are. So I'm enjoying it.
Well, it's nice to have you here. So you started playing baseball at what point in your life, and tell us just the path to the majors, how'd that look?
Yeah, 5 years old I started playing, and it was kind of on the military bases, and all we had to do was, you know, play sports. So we would, but I kind of just gravitated towards baseball quite a bit. It was kind of a natural sport for me, so it wasn't something I had to work super hard at, but I really enjoyed, it wasn't even something I wanted to necessarily work at, I just enjoyed doing it. I threw the ball in the backyard, I threw it off a wall, I broke a few of our windows trying to pitch. Just had a lot of fun time, a lot of fun times as a kid just playing it. And I just kind of naturally got better. I didn't go to baseball camps. My dad didn't send me to any of that stuff. And I just naturally kind of fell into it. And then high school, it's when I excelled. And then I signed out of high school at 18 years old to play professional baseball with the Kansas City Royals.
And then what happened from there?
I got sent from Spokane to Fort Myers, which is rookie ball for the Royals, and that's a long way away for an 18-year-old. Long way. I mean, that's from one end to the other of the country. And I was I kind of depend on my mom for a lot, you know. Like, I was just kind of, so when I got down there, I was panicking because I'm like, I don't know how to even take care of myself. And I called my mother and I was like, Mom, like, hey, can I overnight my clothes? I need some wash. I didn't know how to wash clothes. So I was like, I'll package it up. I'll pay for it overnight. And she's like, no, you figure it out. So I kind of learned the hard way there. But it was an interesting experience, but it was a good one. And then I was actually married in the minor leagues, so we had to struggle there. Our paychecks, or my wife, I think, worked part-time at a shoe store and made more money than I did. So it was a rough gig there for a little bit, but it was well worth it. And failed a little bit in the minor leagues and learned a lot of things, but God kind of sped up the path there at the end, and I ended up spending 4 years in the minor leagues and then the rest in the majors.
Very good. So like any little boy growing up, you played little league, you dream about maybe someday going to the majors. Not all of us get an opportunity like you have, but you have lots of questions for these guys that make it to the big. So here's a couple of questions I've always wondered. When the manager and your other teammates are on the field come to the mound for a talk, what's that conversation about and what's it like?
It depends on the situation. If the gloves are over our face, there's some profanity involved. Our manager doesn't have a glove, so he just lets you have it. But most of the time, it could be strategy. If he doesn't pull us, it's, hey, I want to calm it down. Here's what we're looking at doing. Here's who's up. Here's what we're looking to do right here. Just to make sure everybody's on the same page if it looks like the game's kind of speeding up on us. The game's really fast anyway. I know for you viewers, and some of you don't like baseball, you're like, speeding up. This game's like, it's boring. And I had the pleasure of watching a game as a fan last year, and I was like, whew. people go to, they have season ticket holders for this stuff, you know? I was having a hard time with it myself, but you know, when you're out there, it is actually fast. And so he just tries to calm it down, slow it down, try to figure out strategy, and then he also tries to figure out if you're scared. Now, a lot of times he'll come out, he doesn't know, and he's going to want to look in your eyes, and he's going to want to know if you're, are you scared to be out here, or are you ready to be out here? And even, you know, at the level we play at, and as long as we play, I don't think I was ever scared of anybody I faced. I think it was just doubting myself in the situation. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to say, if you're scared, if you're doubting yourself, I got to get you out. So sometimes he just wanted to look in your eyes and read the story a little bit, and he makes a decision from there.
So I've always wondered, if a manager pulls you, does it hurt your feelings?
You know what? It used to kind of, you know, when I was younger, if he pulled you, he didn't really care if your feelings were hurt or not. When I was older in the game and I was a little bit more established, if he hurt my feelings, we just kind of loudly talked about it, either on the mound or in the dugout, or possibly I got called in the principal's office a few times after the game. But but if I felt like I was confident in who I was and I knew what I was trying to do and, he pulled me, yeah, it would upset me a little bit, and you walk off, and especially if you're not doing well and you walk off, it's just, and they're booing you, you're like doing the dead man walk, man. It's like that 75 feet from the mound to the dugout's a long way when you got to look at everybody yelling at you and calling you a bum and all these other ways they hurt your feelings.
I know, I get it every Sunday. how aware are you of the crowd when you're out on the mound?
When I was first in the game, I was very aware of it. You come from you guys have probably been to the San Antonio minor league, some of the games, hopefully some of you have. When I was in Wichita in 2001 playing Double A, I played here a lot and against them. And it was, you go from that of like 1,000, 1,500 a game, Thirsty Thursdays, dollar beer nights, $3,500 a game. Some bobblehead giveaway might get a little more because everybody wants something free. So, you know, everybody goes in there and so you get more. But then all of a sudden you go from there to a crowd when you get to the major leagues where there's 1,500 people that work in the stadium, not actually are fans. So now you're looking at, even on a bad team, man, it's really bad if it's at 15,000, but you're averaging 20 to 40,000 depending on where you're at. And it creates an atmosphere that's really awkward. And when you're new, you're panicking because there's so many people and they're right in your face and you try not to look up. But then as you start to play, you actually have that tunnel vision where I don't hear anything. I just go out and do my job and I'm so focused on what I'm trying to do. I actually like bigger crowds because it becomes white noise. And littler crowds, you hear Tom in the upper deck telling me I suck. So it's like, you know, you're kind of like,
I get that too, yeah. Every Sunday, back row.
Upper tank up there too, man. I see you guys up there. You know, but so I actually like the crowds where I can't hear. If they all tell me I stink, at least it all sounds like a, you know, it's or a, ooh, the ooh, you know you're in the mood, but, yeah.
So did you have any pregame superstitions or rituals that were a part of how you went about your business?
I wouldn't say, you know, the superstitions. It was a ritual, and it was just because the game is so mental, I like to feel completely prepared because my day is I like routine. I like it a lot. My wife's finding out now that I'm retired that I don't have as much routine, and I kind of start to spaz on her. And from time to time, I'm on the couch, you know. So, you know, I can. It's kind of a deal where I get to the field every day at 1, and then from 1, I work out a little bit, and then I eat, and then I go out and I stretch my arm and I throw. I play some catch to get myself ready for the game later that night because I just want to break the cobwebs off from maybe the day before. And then we go around and we chase baseballs like dogs for all the hitters who get to hit balls, and we run around, and then we get the opportunity to not give a ball to every fan in here that thinks they deserve a free baseball because they played a ticket, and give me a ball, and if I don't give it, it's like, you stink. Yeah, I'm going to give you one now, you know? And so, or the dads are like, give us a ball, we paid a ticket. Congratulations, or $14 in the gift shop, you know? Like it's one of those deals where you just... You get annoyed that way, so I get to do that for over an hour.
But you're not sour.
Yeah, I'm not sour at all about that. And then I go in and have a dinner, a light dinner, and then we play a game. And then, you know, but on the mound, I actually talk to myself a lot. You know, people always ask me, what are you saying on the mound? You're talking a lot. And I'm like, well, if it's a tougher situation, I'm actually praying because I'm like, oh, man, God, I'm going to need help on this one. Like, all right, it's a big situation. I mean, you got to show me something here. I don't know that, you know, I'm talking, and then the guy in the batter's box just crossed himself 18 times. So I'm like, well, dang, I'm better up him by 19, you know? So I'm, you know, I'm trying to, how are you gonna know who's gonna win here? You know, like if you're crossing and I'm praying, I don't know who God's gonna say, hey, you get the hit or you get that, get out, you know? You're freaking out. So I'm trying to pray. And there was this one time in Philly, game six, it's such a cool crowd. I was super excited to be there. I was actually praying for all the souls of everybody in that stadium. They were just, and it was a tough situation. I come off the mound, and it was the game to win it, to go to play the Texas Rangers in the World Series. Sorry, not sorry, but sorry about that, guys, in 2010. And so it was a big game, and Hirschbeck's the umpire, and Hirschbeck's like, hey, Affelt, what are you saying out there, man? You're talking really fast. And I said, I looked out, I said, I see dead people.
I get that. I get that too. Yeah.
Yeah. You see dead people all the time, I heard. You know, like, so it was like, I straight faced him. He looked at me. He's like, I'm not even going to comment to that. I'm like, all right. And just rolled right back on by him, you know? He gave me strike zone like that, though. So I figured it was good.
So 14 years in the majors, three World Series championship rings, and your name's listed among some of the greats, Mariano Rivera and Babe Ruth. You're kind of a big deal. Like, now that you're retired, how do you see all that? What's that like for you?
You know, it's more of a platform for me. Like, what I did in the game was awesome. And I you know, I learned a lot, made a lot of mistakes, and I didn't always love the game. You'll hear that in a minute. But, you know, what I did in the game, I think I learned that it's more of a platform. You know, what the successes that I had on the field, in the playoffs especially, just kind of allowed me to have maybe a foot in the door to different scenarios that I want to do now that I'm done. Whether it be, I'm a color analyst for the Giants on the road a little bit, and you know, it gives some credibility and weight to what I say on TV because you played the game. You know, we all listen to ESPN and all these people that are talking about us, and you're like, you played in Little League, and you're telling me why I'm bad? You were bad in Little League, dude. So, like, how are you going to tell me that I don't deserve a job when you couldn't even get out of, like, the 7U team, right? So, like, it's like, and they're the one talking and bashing it. So there's some credibility when there's a guy that played it and said, like, this is what's going on here. And so I think there's that, but there's also things for me with what I'm doing ministry-wise, what I'm doing off the field too, because it kind of gives credibility where I'm coming from, and so I feel like God just had expanded my territory a little bit through my successes on the field, and I think that was really important, and that's how I kind of look at what I did. I definitely don't, you know, wear my rings; they're too heavy, really. But I don't, and they're shiny; they're super shiny. It's awkward, but I don't wear those around, and I don't necessarily walk around, you know, with, you know, my license plate doesn't say three-time World Series champ or anything like that, you know, so. But I like to use what I did as a player to do what I do now.
Okay, I'm going to ask you two questions, answer real quickly. I'm looking around, I see a lot of young athletes in the room. What's your best piece of advice to these young athletes?
Have fun and play, you know, go out there and enjoy it, and don't get so angry when you fail. The word failure shouldn't even be in the English language. You know, those are teachable moments. When you don't do well at the game that day, what did you learn from that, though? What did you learn from the prior at bat? Or what did you learn, whatever sport you're playing? If you're failing, just it's not failing. It's what am I being taught here? And when I succeed, just bask in the success. It's okay. You worked hard to be successful. Be like, yeah, I had a great game. Be happy about it. The next day is a new day. Start again. But we're taking sports so seriously nowadays that you're pushing kids to have to be something that they're not ready to be. And you see it a lot in other areas, and I'm going to offend probably a lot of people in here, but you're banking your whole identity off these 18-year-old kids and their successes. And to me, that's a lot of pressure you're putting on kids. That's a lot of pressure you're putting on them and their family and in their schools. And an 18-year-old kid throws an interception and the whole state's devastated for the rest of the week. And you're like, man, you bank your whole life on an 18-year-old kid making a decision, and I think that to me it's about having fun and enjoy it and be as good as you want, but play and have fun and don't get angry when you fail. Be taught by your failures, you know.
Okay, so my second question was, what would you say to parents? But I think maybe you just said that.
Yep, put too much pressure on your kids, man. Like, have fun. I didn't go to one baseball camp. I'm not saying they're bad, But I had fun, and I enjoyed it. And it's hard. I've got boys. I've got, you know, three boys. My youngest one fell asleep. So he's super excited to hear me speak. So, and it's hard. You want your kids to do good. And sometimes you're like, hey, just do this and you'll be better. And it gets like that. But there's a time we got to step away and say, man, am I putting too much pressure on my kid to where he feels like if he fails at something or he doesn't want to do something, that my identity is in my child and I can't do that. And that's too much pressure. And so I even have a hard time with it myself, but I think it's very important.
Hey, the times that you and I have been able to have lunch together and talk, I've really, really appreciated the authenticity that you describe your own walk with God and the struggles that you've had throughout the years and what you're doing to sort of make your way in your faith. And so I'm really excited that want to give you the remainder of the service and just talk to our folks about some of the things that are on your heart.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm going to move some of this stuff back.
Yeah, I almost fell off the stage a few times.
So you can dominate.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, I'm a storyteller, so I enjoy story. I think some of what I went through in baseball allowed me, even in my failures, allowed me to tell story. And I learned a ton in my walk with Jesus because of where my journey in baseball, where it took me. And it's not all, I understand that not everybody in here is a baseball fan, so I don't try to talk to where everybody... to where it'd be like, if unless you understand baseball, you can't relate. I don't want to do that here. So I want to kind of give you a little bit of my baseball story, but also kind of give you some, maybe relate to you on other levels. And we talked a little bit about my minor league career. I kind of, 4 years, got to the big leagues when I was 22. And at that time, I was on top of the world, because at 22 years of age, like most kids are just coming out of college trying to start their minor league career, and I'm in the big leagues at 22, and I'm super pumped. And I'm like, man, I saw my first paycheck, the first 2 weeks of my paycheck, I look down and it's like more money than I made in like 2 full years in the minor leagues in 2 weeks. So you're kind of like, you're stoked. You're like, I've made it. This is where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to be Cy Young in a year. I'm going to sign this huge contract where I can buy my own island. And I could, you know, I could do all kinds of fun stuff, right? Like, this is going to be awesome. And within 4 years, I absolutely hated the game. Hated it. I played for the Kansas City Royals in the early 2000s. 100 losses every year. It was the same thing every day. Go to the field, get booed, go home. Go to the field, get cheered for like a little bit, then get booed because you end up blowing the game, and then you lose and you go home. And it was like over and over and over again. There just wasn't any success. And I started thinking, I started getting to the point where when you don't have success, when you don't think that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and you're feeling like there is a, you're accomplishing things, you start to hate them. And I literally hated the game of baseball. Hated it. Didn't want to play it. I was on my counter at one time. It was my fourth year, into third or fourth year, and I was crying on my counter. And my wife was just trying to console me because I was like, I didn't want to play. I didn't want to do this anymore. I need him to release me because I can't quit. There's nothing in me as an athlete that says you can quit. Nothing. And if I did quit, I'd be a quitter my whole life. So I can't do that. So I figured I got to get released. Maybe I'll get released. Maybe I'll do bad. I was trying to encourage myself anywhere possible. Maybe if I tank the game tonight, they'll release me. And then I can go home and be free of this terrible place that I'm in, right? And I was complaining. And I started reading this book. And it was about a guy named Count Zinzendorf. He was in the 1600s. And he went to an all-boys school. And he ended up being a part of this group, and they created the Order of the Mustard Seed. And in that order, it said this: the Order of the Mustard Seed is love. Is no man shall live for himself. Is the order. And the three things under that is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself, and take the gospel into the world using the platform that He's given you. Problem is, I didn't like my platform. I hated my platform. I didn't understand my platform. I didn't understand what it meant to love my neighbor as myself, because there are a lot of my neighbors that I honestly did not like. Or they didn't even talk to me. Like, you know, you have a neighbor you don't even see. I didn't understand. I was so caught up in my own thing. It's like I didn't want to venture outside of my clubhouse. I didn't want to get to know people. I didn't understand what it meant. And I did love God. But I didn't understand the other part of the verse. I never had my whole life. Because it didn't make sense to me. Because it's so hard to love people you don't know and pray for your enemies. And it is very, very difficult to do that. We want to say we know that, but we don't really live that out. We don't. And I remember reading it, and I was kind of excited for some reason. I looked at this thing as a no man shall live for himself, and I was like, man, this is awesome. But I don't know what it means, and I'm not in the place that I can really receive it yet, and I don't get it. And 4 years into my career, 4.5, I was still begging to get out of Kansas City. I finally looked at God one day, and I sat there, and I was at this place called the International House of Prayer in Kansas City, and I was sitting there, and I was worshiping. And I finally just looked at God and said, you either got to get me out of here or get me out of baseball, but I need something that says you want me to do this because I don't understand who I am. And 5 minutes before the trade deadline, we had just played the Texas Rangers. We were flying home, and we flew in the next day, and 5 minutes before that deadline of the trade deadline, I was sitting there saying, God, you got to be kidding me. I was supposed to get traded. How am I not out of here? Phone rings. And the GM for the Royals, who's the GM now, Dayton Moore, calls me and says, Jeremy, we've just traded you. Really? I mean, oh, man, you know? All right, well, what do we do? And he's like, why don't you come to the field? We'll say some guys, we'll figure it out. And you're going to go to call. I traded you to the Colorado Rockies and all this stuff. And my wife was like, what happened? I said, I just got traded. And she's screaming, yeah! And my honey, he's still on the phone. It's really awkward, you know, that you're cheering this loud, you know. And she's like, I'll pack your bags. I'll meet you at the airport. Let's figure it out. And I'm like, all right. So I get off the phone, and she's rolling the suitcase into the car. Like, she's throwing it in, and she already packed up. So I was like, all right, I'll meet you. And she said, I'm going to go this way. And Kansas City's a big loop, so the airport's top of the loop. So I went to the field, got my gear, packed up, said my goodbyes, shook my hands to who I need to shake my hands to, and left. Got on a plane. Before I knew it, before I even could breathe, I was on this plane to Colorado. Halfway through the air, I'm like, God, thank you so much. This is awesome. I needed this, man. I was excited. And then on approach, I'm starting to think something. And I was like, I mean, anybody here golf? Some of you golf? Well, have you hit a golf ball in Colorado? Like, you feel awesome. I mean, you tee that sucker up, man. You're used to hitting like 280. You're up to like 360, you know? And your chip shots are from like 60 yards. You're like, I'm the greatest golfer ever, you know? But then you're thinking, well, why does it go that far, right? You're like, well, there's no barometric pressure. Ball goes up, doesn't come down. And I'm thinking, I'm a pitcher. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, maybe I should be a little more specific on the trade scenario. Because you went from like, you know, like, I'm doing bad in Kansas City where there's a ton of humidity to how am I going to do better when you put me on the moon? Like, I don't understand. Like, there's no gravity. I mean, it's just miserable. It's a fight to the bat rack. Hitters, I kid you not. When our guys in San Francisco, and they were in my division for 7 years, right? We had to play there a lot. It was a mental grind. I mean, when our hitters were slumping, they'd be like, where are we in Colorado? I'm definitely going to get out of my slump in Colorado. I mean, you're getting hits in Colorado, right? So I land, and I'm like, oh, man, like, unbelievable. And then I get a text from my teammate, Scott Sullivan, who played in the National League. He's like, hey, keep it down. That helped me, you know? So I'm like, all right, I got to keep my fastball down. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So I get to the field. They don't pitch me the first night. I meet everybody, and I get into the bullpen, and I just watch the game. Second night, I'm there. First pitter up, right? I'm like, I'm running into the game, and I look up, and there's this big, massive guy getting in the box. I'm like, man, he looks familiar. And it was Prince Fielder, right? I'm like, I think he's kind of good, you know? And I was like looking, and I was like, he was in Milwaukee at the time. I was like, I faced this guy earlier this year in Milwaukee. I threw curveballs at him. I think I struck him out on a curveball. So I said, all right. So I threw a fastball, and he took it. And I threw this curveball, and I threw this thing, and I snapped that thing off. And I have a really good curveball. I'm known for my curveball, and I throw it. And I'm like, it's like slow motion, man. It's like when you're playing the video games, and the guy hangs a curveball to you, and all of a sudden it just slows, and the ball just gets bigger for you on the video game to hit, you know? And I swear it says that, man, and it says hit me on its way in, right? And you're just like, please break. And all of a sudden he hits this ball so hard, and I'm like, he hits it straight up, and I'm like, oh, he might have popped that up. And I turn and I look, right? And my right fielder, it's when they hit a ball so far, your right fielder just goes like this and goes, and that's what happened. I'm like, why isn't the right fielder moving, right? I'm like, and it just keeps going, and it went in the third deck up there. And I kid you not, it was literally to a point where you could hear some guy goes, "Welcome to Colorado," you know? And I'm like, "Thanks, Tom, appreciate that," you know? And so like you're sitting and you're just ticked off and you're like, "God, this stinks, I hate this game," right? And so I walk off and I go to my hotel room and I'm ticked and then I get up the next morning and I go to get a coffee and the mermaid's calling, right? So you're like looking for that mermaid in the Starbucks. I'm going for the mermaid, right? So I'm heading to the mermaid. So I'm walking over to the mermaid and I'm just angry at where I'm at. I got a headache. There's no oxygen. You know, like it's like frustrating to be there and I hate this game. And the thing about hating the game is I'm thinking that what you're all thinking right now. So there's a guy that's going to come up to me and he's going to say, "I hate my life. I hate my job." "Oh yeah, what do? "Play Major League Baseball. And I make millions of dollars a year." And everybody's like, "Dude, I that would be miserable." Like, I cannot imagine that your life could be happy at all. Like, you play in these beautiful stadiums, you travel on private airplanes with your team, your nice clothes, nice car, house, like, you make a lot of money. I could see why you probably need to transition out and do something else, right? So you are so lost, but you're super scared because I can't talk to anybody about this. And I'm lonely because I don't know why I'm doing what I'm doing. I don't like it. And I don't understand this baseball player platform because it makes no sense that this is what I'm called to do. This is why I was put here on earth, to play on this field, to fail like I'm doing and still make money, and to think that I actually think that this is my calling? This is miserable. I'm not doing anything for the kingdom of God because I'm too upset with my career. I'm too selfish in what's really happening to me that I'm almost trying, almost like in a religious sense, where if I pray more, if I read more, if I read my Bible 4 times a day, all these things I'm trying to do because I don't like what my life's like, and I don't know why I'm here. And I'm searching so hard to understand who I am. And so I'm super scared and I'm lonely. And I walk up to this Starbucks, and if you've been to Denver, there's this thing called the 16th Street Mall, and it's just like a lot of shopping, no cars, just shopping, food, stuff like that, and a lot of street kids, like 15, 16, for whatever, teenagers to low 20s, but a lot of them. I mean, they commune there for whatever reason, and they congregate, and it's like, man, there's just, you've always known that coming in and playing, that there's just always these street kids. So I start walking to the 16th Street Mall where the Starbucks is at, and I see the Rite Aid right in front of me. And as I'm crossing the street over to the Rite Aid, because the Starbucks is right next to it, I literally see this girl. She's about 16, 17 years old. And she's sitting at right outside the door. And she's sitting there, and she's eating this cup of noodles, dry cup of noodles. I don't know if she stole it or if she got money to get it. I don't know, but she's sitting there. And I tap her on the shoulder, and she shies right away from me, and she looks at me, split lip, black eye, ripped jeans, rough night the night before, right? And I said, "I don't want anything from you. I just want to know if you want something to eat." And she said, "Please." So I walked into Starbucks. I said, "Hey, I need that green sludgy-looking drink that everybody says is healthy for you, but it looks like not good," right? And I need whatever has the most sugar. And so the lady hands me a blueberry muffin. Tip for you, Starbucks, even the staff thinks blueberry muffins have the most sugar in their products, right? So I said, "All right." So I walked over and I grabbed it and I went and I handed it to her. She whips it out of my hands, right? And she looks at me and she says, "Thank you." And life stopped. It was probably 5 seconds, but it stopped for me. It felt like 20 minutes. And our eyes met, and it's like our souls connected. It was the weirdest thing. I stared at her and she stared at me, and I see this girl that is scared, alone, not knowing who she can talk to. And I'm this guy that's scared, alone, and not knowing who I can talk to in my reality, in my world. My wife, I talk to my wife, but she's trying to console me. She's doing what brides do, like, but I can't, but she can't help me necessarily. And so I'm sitting there and I'm looking at this girl, and it's like I go to the field every day, beautiful field. I stay in an unbelievable hotel. I have nice clothes. I know where my next meal's coming from. I have unbelievable catered meals at the field. We're pampered. We get whatever we want, whenever we want. And this girl doesn't even know where she's going to get her next food meal from. But our realities are the same in our mind. And I said, man, when she said thank you, it was not a thank you for the food. It was a thank you for letting me know I exist. And that was incredible for me because we all do it. I do it still. We all do it. You see a homeless person, it's awkward. It is awkward. And you will. You'll get the temporary phone call where it's all of a sudden you're walking by and you hear the coin jingle and you're like, hello? Yeah. And you walk right by that person and then you put the phone away right when you walk by. Or you're temporarily blind or you're temporarily deaf or you flat out just don't even act like they even exist. It's like you get that temporary, like, it's awkward. But you walk by them. And this girl just needed to be known. Like, let me know that I am here. Don't go on the other side of the street. Don't grab your phone. Like, I might have made bad decisions in my life to get myself here, but instead of that, but I need to know that I'm a human being, that I exist. And I went to the field that day, super excited to be a baseball player, and no idea why. But I was sitting there, and I would sit in the bullpens before a game, and I would pray, I'd listen to worship. I was trying to do everything I could to not hate the game. I'd complain, whatever. I was just trying not to get too caught up at the field, and I was hoping the game would hurry up and get over with. Hoping I didn't pitch. I mean, just get this game over with so I can get out of here. So I went that day and was like, man, why do I feel so I actually feel happy. I feel good about who I am right now. And I started remembering that girl and what I did to help her out. And I leave the game that night, and I go back to my hotel room where I was staying, and I go up there, and I just started doing what I always do. I try to read scripture because I tried to calm my mind. I was so devastated in who I was. I was just trying to hopefully fall asleep and just read something positive so I could sleep, go to sleep with those thoughts in my head because I was so far gone. And I'm not trying to super spiritualize anything. I swear this happened, and it changed, and it definitely is a God thing because I don't just put my finger in the Bible and open it up and hope there's something there, right? Like, you know, everybody does it where they're just like, and then all of a sudden it's just random thing about somebody killing somebody. And like, that's great. I need to hear that. You know, like, it's just, you know, I wanted to actually have something from God. And I remember I went to this scripture and it caught my eye and I stopped and I read it. And I'm going to read it to you because this changed my life. All right. It's Matthew 25. In 31, it says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right, but the goats on the left. And then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, thirsty and give you a drink? When did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer him, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you have done it to me. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me. You cursed into the eternal fire prepared for you, the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, you did not visit me. Then they also answered, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and didn't minister to you? And he will say to this, when you didn't do it to the least of these, you did not do it to me. And I remember sitting there staring at that, thinking, that's a little harsh. And I was thinking, man, this is who I am, because the first time in my life, I actually recognized why I was here, and it wasn't to be a baseball player. That is not my identity, and I remember feeling so good about what I did for that young lady, but then it transferred into what I did on the field, and it made me enjoy what I did because I was thinking, man, I have the ability now to be able to be on a platform to make a change. And I put my pants on one leg at a time, just like everybody else does. I am no better than anybody else. I throw a ball over a white plate, maybe better than most. But that doesn't make me any different in the real world. Because I knew the reality in which I was living in. And I saw the reality of that young lady. And I said, we are the same. And I needed someone to let me know I existed, but I didn't know who I could talk to. But I can see her reality, and I could see that she needed to be let to be known. I could see her saying, please help me. Let me know I exist. I need help. My biggest mistake that day was not understanding her story. But I remember thinking, man, that's why I felt good. And I did not know it, but I shared the love of Jesus with that girl. Simply because I looked at them, I looked at her and I said, man, I see you're in need, I'm gonna help you. And the least of these are not people that are so dirty and gross and downtrodden that everybody's, they're not mercy cases. That's not Jesus. Your neighbor could have a nice house, could look great, everything could be good, but they could be a least of these. You don't know it unless you talk to them, unless you ask them, unless you serve people in your community. It started my whole career over again. You flip over my baseball card from 02 to 06, and you're going to see statistics, and then you're going to see 07 all the way down the rest of my career. And you're going to see a complete change in statistics. And I'm not saying God's going to bless you anymore because you do it. What it did is I understood who I was, and I was not a Major League Baseball player. That's what I did. Who am I? I am Christ in Jeremy. That's who I am, and that's what I'm doing. Christ living in me allows me to see Christ in everybody, not just the saved. The Bible says that we are all created in the image of the Almighty God. All of us were created with that image. Not just the saved. But as someone that identifies as Christ in Jeremy, that's who I am. Now I can recognize and see and understand what it means to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. The Bible actually goes on to say, if you can't love your neighbor, then you don't really love God. Don't try to say you love God and don't love your neighbor, because they're the one and the same. And that's a biblical truth. That's not me making it up. And so when we as believers can sit back and say, man, I'm just a normal person. I'm not better than anybody else. And if I see somebody hurting, I want to help. Empathy is very big in this country. We can all do that. You can all drive by somebody who's broken down the road and be like, man, that stinks. And then keep going. That's empathy. You can see someone that's hurting and sick or homeless and be like, man, that's too bad for them. Anybody can do that. Compassion takes a lot more, because compassion sees something and says, I want to do something about it. And it won't happen every time. I don't do it every time. I really don't. I do walk by a lot. But who am I? Christ and Jeremy, not a baseball player. You're not Susie the lawyer, Susie the mom, Susie the nurse, Susie the doctor. You're not Joe the businessman, the CEO, the builder, whatever you are. That's not who you are. That's what you do. And that is a platform that you've been given to bring hope to a lot of people. But who you are, who I am, is Christ in Jeremy. That changes my concept on what I do for a living and how I can enjoy my job, knowing that I can help a lot of people with some of my skill sets. And that's what I've been here for, because now the order of the mustard seed makes sense. Now I can love the Lord God with all my heart, soul, and mind. Now I can love my neighbor as myself. And now I can take the gospel into all the world and preach the gospel using the platform that I was given. And that changed my whole being on who I was. I raised my sons with that concept. And I don't always do it well, because frankly, I don't even love my family like myself. I don't do a good job of that all the time. But I know that's who I am. I know that's what I'm for. I know that's why I'm here. And that's what the church does. And that's what we do as a church community. We're not here to sit here and just worship on Sunday and listen to a message. We're here because we now have an identity in Christ. And what do? We love our neighbor. That's what we do. And that's what I want to be a part of in this community. And I know I'm new here, but if you see me around, know that that's my being. That's what I stand for. That's who I am. That's what I want to be about. And fortunately, I get to come up here and tell you who I am. It means so much to me that I have a tattoo on my left forearm that says, no man shall live for himself. I don't know how some of you feel about tattoos. I have a lot of them, actually. I have a lot. But the one that stands out the most for me is, no man shall live for himself. Why? Because I need a reminder, and that's a reminder from me. I need to be reminded of who I am. I'm Christ in Jeremy, and what Christ in Jeremy does, the identity of Christ does for me, is it's easy to love him with all my heart, soul, and mind, and now I can actually understand what it means to love my neighbor as myself and to serve my community. And it's not just the least of these in a very unjust way. It's loving our neighbor. You will find hope in that identity, and now all of a sudden you're not so angry about what you do or sad in what you do, or maybe you're lost. Maybe some of you in here are like, I'm confused on what I'm even supposed to do. I don't like my job, same as me, or maybe I don't even know who I am. You know, maybe I don't know what I'm supposed to do. You're young. You're young in here. Some of these young kids, you guys have no idea. But I can tell you this, it doesn't matter if you're 10, 11, or 12. It doesn't matter if you're 7, 8, or 9. You can love your neighbor. You can love your friends. You can look at school and say, man, I want to go sit with that person. You can do what the Bible's asking you to do, and you will find joy. I started a nonprofit called Generation Alive. And what we do is we go into schools and we teach kids how to be student leaders. And what we part of our programs and student leaders, we do two major programs. We do a hunger initiative called Something to Eat. Shocker. I asked the girl if she wanted something to eat, you know? I help start a curriculum on that. We have a couple of organizations that work with us on it. And we do a Something to Eat food packaging ministry with kids. They raise all the money and they do it themselves. Why? Because I need them to take ownership. I need them to know what it means. Don't just bring a can and fire it in the bucket. This isn't a canned food drive. This is, no, you raise the money. It's 25 cents a meal. You raise it, you pack it, you box it up. And if you're in a faith-based scenario, which sometimes we are, we can pray over the boxes. Know that you are doing unconditional love to somebody. That's loving your neighbor. I have so many kids that have come up to me and say, why do we feel so much joy in packaging food? And if I'm not in a faith-based area, I got to ask them, unfortunately, in this country. Are you asking me my opinion because I can't voluntarily give it to you? Yeah, I'm asking you. Why do we feel joy? I said, because you love like Jesus. That's what you're doing. And you're serving the least of these. You've never met them, but you're willing to serve and love. And that's what loving like Jesus does. It gives you a hope, and it gives you a soul, a sense of who am I? Because my soul was birthed. When I came to this world, my soul craved the love of God, and it craved the reflection of Jesus. And not everybody does that, but that's what it's for. And that's why people feel so much joy when they serve others. And we love it. And we love doing it. And I love working with youth. And I love working with kids. But I'm calling a whole community to think this way. And some of you may do it. God bless you. And some of you may not know how to do it. I'm sure there can be opportunities to help. But that's what this church community is all about. That's why I'm excited. I attend church here. That's why I'm excited to attend church here. Because of what it stands for. And what Pastor Paul has been able to do. It's been awesome. I had a critical spirit. I have a very critical spirit at times. I walk into a church and I'm going to criticize. Right? You get a lot of those. Yeah. Right? And I criticize because I'm worried. I'm like, what are you going to preach from the podium? Is it going to be a guilt message? I'm going to walk out of here feeling worse about myself. All these different things, right? I want to give hope. This kid, I'm not here to make you feel worse. I'm actually saying, this is who you are. This is the joy that you have. And it's okay to go out and do it and feel good about it and know that it's okay. It's not awkward. This is the love of Jesus. This is what we say we represent. And we're not always going to do it well. But that's who we are. And that's what my family stands for. And that's what we're here to be in this community. And I have friends here that don't even go to this church that I'm so thankful for in both services that have just come to hear it. That's why I love it here. Man, we're developing friends so easy here. And it's so much fun. And we love it. And I thank you so much for being the people that you are. But I just want to encourage you with that message in case anybody needs it. Father God, thank you so much for this opportunity to be able to share my heart with this awesome community. Thank you for the day. Thank you for just being able to be able to worship you freely in this country. And I also ask that you would protect us as we drive home and allow us to enjoy our families this afternoon and evening. In Jesus' name, amen.